Hello and welcome to the Buds All Day podcast. We are back for the first time since I believe it was game four of the Leafs Lightning series of last year. It's been a while. I'm back with my man, Noah Banks. Noah, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing great, man. Playoff time. I felt there's not really much to talk about in the regular season as a Leaf fan. After 8 years, you kind of get bored of the same thing every year. So we thought we'd take a hiatus until playoff time, but we're back. We got suckered into it by a couple of Twitter followers today. So we're down. We're ready to talk about this Leafs-Bruins series. So before we get into that, let's just maybe see what your thoughts are on the season as a whole, just quickly before we get into the series.
I liked it. I thought it was enjoyable. Like, you know, I watched most of the games when I was available to, and it was fun. Like I just liked how there was a different thing every night. I didn't feel like it was the same as it had been in the past, as much as core four, core five. It was just fun seeing Bertuzzi, Domi. You know, sometimes you get a Reeves fight in there. So it was a little similar. It was different than the Cardio Kings of the past. So in a night-to-night basis, it was fun to watch. And then, of course, cool storylines like Matthews getting 69. And, you know, that stuff was interesting too. So overall, in terms of like entertainment, like pretty good season in the day-to-day. How about you?
I'm the same as you. I used to be the heavy-duty stats guy, all about expected goals and all that stuff, which I still do enjoy. I just don't think it's everything anymore. But I have come to the dark side of wanting more goons and big hits and cross checks of the face and all that stuff. So I was very excited when we got Max Domi. He did not disappoint. Seeing him instead of the cardio merchant Alex Kerfoot has been an absolute revelation. Guys like Bobby McMahon, Robertson, Nyes all having kind of good seasons as young players. It's just, yeah, it was a lot more interesting, I guess, than the previous seasons in some ways. I'm not going to lie and say I watched every game because, again, it's, you kind of know where you're going to end up in April. So it's not like it's all about these next seven games here against Boston and hopefully more beyond that. But yeah, it was a more enjoyable regular season, I guess, too, because we didn't have that whole win around thing hanging over us for the whole year. So that's at least – we didn't win more than a round, but at least we won one. Now, hopefully, we can win more. So with that, we get into our series with the Bruins. First off, how do you feel – how did you feel on Tuesday night when it was kind of confirmed that we would be facing Boston instead of Florida?
Well, obviously, like, first thing is I'm thinking about, like, the moments where you're sitting on the couch and it's like, oh, that's tough after the loss and you're all down on the team and, like, obviously, that's kind of the first place my mind went, like those feelings of disappointment after some of those Bruins series. But then it really kind of hit me when people were kind of bringing up how long ago it was. Like I was texting with a buddy of mine and we were laughing that I was in high school the last time we played the Bruins and now I have my degree. And so it was like such a different like perspective for us to be like it's a different group. These guys aren't kids anymore. This isn't that Bruins team that I grew up being scared of. Patrice Bergeron is in Cabo right now sipping a margarita. Like, it's a different vibe right now. And that really helped put things into perspective for me. And so as much as it's in my head about the way things were, it's exciting about this newer group and this, like, I feel like a team that it's in a way different position than they were when we first played the Bruins.
Yeah, I'm with you. We'll kind of get into what separates them from the Bruins of the past. But honestly, if you can get past the Demons, more importantly, if the Leafs can, then you're right. This is a total – the jerseys are the same, but the team is very different. I would say this 2024 Bruins team compared to the 2019 is probably more different than those versions were to the 2013 Bruins. Like, the 2013 and 2019 teams both had Chara. They both had Bergeron, Krejci, those guys. They're gone and they're huge pieces. So when you're looking at Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zaka down the middle compared to Krejci and Bergeron, it's a big step down. They're still a good team. They still have two really good goalies. You know, again, a couple really good defensemen in Lindholm and McAvoy, but I feel a lot better facing them than I would have with Florida. It was a bummer losing to Florida in that way, kind of getting dominated, but at the same time, the Leafs were kind of checked out. So you can't – we saw last year with the Panthers, you can't really – pick your poison and think you're going to win because we would have picked Florida over Boston last year and that backfired on us. So this could definitely backfire. But when you just look at it from a matchup perspective, Boston seems like a much, much easier.
I 100% agree. And I think that I've been very guilty of this in the past. Like you said, picking an opponent, oh, this is easier. This is an easier matchup. But I think when looking at Boston, the big thing that I keep coming back to is Florida can play Alexander Barkov, who, if you're picking a guy who can go up against Matthews, it's a big defensive forward who can also contribute on offense down the middle like Barkov. You've got Matthew Tkachuk on line two, playing the same side of the ice that Mitch Marner is going to be playing on. Like, I start going through the Florida Panthers, and it's like, if Bobrovsky's on, that's a tough series to be playing in, and that's some big guys on their team that'll match up well against our guys. And then I go and look at a team like Boston, who it's, well, Charlie Coyle's not Barkov, and you've got Jake DeBrusque isn't Matthew Tkachuk, and it's very different in terms of the stylistic fit. And so, and I know you can't pick your opponent and you can't take anyone lightly, but I'd much prefer this Bruins team over that that Panthers team.
Yeah, you hit it on the head. Like it's not like it's a slam dunk. I think the Leafs are going to win. I would never think that even if we're facing Arizona, but or I guess Utah, we would say now. But yeah, it is definitely just a lot lighter. Like you said, Barkov is a different animal. Florida was a good team last year, a really good team, and I think they've gotten even better this year. Boston has two kind of lockdown defensemen, I would say, in McAvoy and Lindholm. But, yeah, they can't shut you down the way that a Barkov line could. Like, we saw Florida. I know we saw that comparison chart where it showed the Leafs beside Florida when everybody thought they were going to face each other. And it was showing all the Leafs' offensive metrics. They were second in goals, second in expected goals, second in scoring chances. And you look at Florida on the other end, and they were, you know, first in expected goals against, first in goals given up. Like, they're an elite defensive team. Boston has really good goaltending, but in terms of their actual like team defense, they're not. They're certainly no Florida, and I think there's a lot of ways.
Yeah, and I think we've brought it up a few times, but it's down the middle is definitely the area that I'm most looking at as a big area of weakness for this Bruins team. Just having to deal with Austin Matthews, and I've been a big proponent of this on Twitter, but I feel like Austin Matthews in this season can be quite scary to go up against, and I feel like if you're the Bruins head coach and you're that organization, you might be thinking too much that I have to stop Austin Matthews, and not wasting, but spending too many defensive resources on that matchup and lose sight of the depth, which I think we've underrated even as fans this season. I know we all are pretty well in agreement that they're good, but I feel like they've taken a huge step this year, and we're not quite giving the credit on the third and fourth lines of how much these guys actually can score relative to the credit they're given. And so if you miss that matchup and maybe give him too much, and even if he doesn't prevail, I feel like that bottom six and that top mid nine is going to really be a problem for the Bruins.
Yeah, and especially if Max Domi can come back and it can be Bertuzzi, Domi, Matthews again, which is definitely the ideal way for the Leafs to go, because we saw the Bruins at practice today, Thursday. They had McAvoy and Lindholm together. So those are far and away their two best defensemen. They are going to be using their best shutdown resources. And you got to assume that they will be directing that towards the best goal scorer in the league. So if Matthews can play those two, eat up their minutes, and even come out even, like you said, that opens up the depth, guys. Not just Marner, Tavares, Nylander, but yeah, guys like Bobby McMahon, if he's healthy, Matt Nyes, Nick Robertson, if he gets in the lineup. Like, there's a lot of guys who can kind of exploit the rest of the Bruins team on the defense behind McAvoy and Lindholm is nothing too special. So I think you're probably with me that I really, really hope that we see Domi come back. I do not want to see Marner with Matthews again. Not that I even think they're that bad. I'm overjudging them because of the last two games when they were clearly just trying to get Matthews number 70. But just to see Marner and Tavares get to go against an easier second and third pair rather than having, you know, the lower those depth guys who you brought up who are good, but like, I don't think they're going to exploit them the way a Mitch Marner potentially could.
Yeah, exactly. And that balanced scoring could be a huge difference. You mentioned that top pair, and I'm looking at that second and third pair. Like, Matt Grizzlick's not the defenseman he used to be. And, you know, Charlie Coyle, you know, we know he's dealt with the concussion history and some other injury issues. And then beyond that, you've got Shattenkirk on his off wing paired up with Andrew Peak, and like, I just look at those defensemen, like, once you're beyond that top pair, and again, we're talking about that Marner matchup against that second pair with Tavares, and then you've got William Nylander going against that bottom pair. Like, this is quite a difficult matchup. If you can stop that Matthews pair, I feel like that might be too much to handle for those bottom guys on Boston. And if one thing we've seen last year was that they were a little slow on making some adjustments in their series. Jim Montgomery was, and so I worry that maybe not worry because obviously Leafs fan, I want them to win, but I feel like he might be a little slow to make some adjustments there. And I've said it before, but I think that it could be something where you're down one or two early, and it's tough to come back from those in the NHL nowadays.
Yeah, and you talked about his slow adjustments. Last year, keeping Linus Ullmark in for the first six games of the series against Florida, even though he was playing hurt when they had another good goalie. Like, we talk a lot in Leaf Nation about Sheldon Keefe and his adjustments. A lot of us are kind of happy that we are on the road because we play better on the road when Sheldon Keefe can't line match as much because he overthinks it. Galaxy brains himself into some trouble. Jim Montgomery hasn't exactly proven much in the playoffs either. So that could definitely be something that comes back to bite Boston. But yeah, I'm curious if they're going to keep that McAvoy-Lindholm line together. I think we'll see in game one if Matthews can be on a separate line from Marner, I really think Boston's going to struggle to contend, like to stop whoever that unguarded line is. And that's, again, why I don't want Matthews and Marner together. Because if you put them together and you shut them down, the Leafs become a lot easier to stop. I'm curious what you think the Leafs should be doing on the lines. I below that Matthews, Domi, and Bertuzzi line.
So I love Bobby McMahon at that two left wing because I really like him against Pastrnak. Not because like he's some otherworldly talent, but I ideally I'd like maybe Yarncroke there, but I don't know 100% with his injury. And then I don't know if Matthew Knies at this stage in his career is a guy you want going up against David Pastrnak. I just think I tweeted it out today, but if you guys are NBA fans, the 2015 Warriors versus Cavaliers when Matthew Dellavedova had to go up against prime Steph Curry and shut him down in the finals. And he's not doing a whole lot, but he's trying his best out there. And he's just always on him. And I thought Bobby McMahon could be that type of guy. And then again, with the bottom lines, you're doing Holmberg probably down the middle with Nylander. And then I've been saying, I'm thinking it's Knies or it's Yarncroke for game one. And then depending on Yarncroke's availability, and then that Reeves camp combo with Knies. And you'll notice I left Dewar out of there, and that's tough for me. But I just, again, with Yarncroke not being available, he might have to come in. I struggle with that one. Because I really like Knies on the fourth line recently. I feel like I'm all over the place here, but I'm trying to find a way to get Knies on that fourth line for some weird matchups against Pat Maroon and JVR there.
Yeah, this is, you're just kind of going into a difference between the teams of the previous years for the Leafs. Like, when is the last time we had forward depth like this? Like, we've always had the core four. We've had those really strong top of the lineup forwards, but we have a guy like Nick Robertson who has a really high chance of sitting in game one. Now, you could argue Ryan Reeves, talent-wise, doesn't really deserve to be in the lineup, but I certainly feel like at least for game one, maybe game two, he serves a big purpose, and especially in that, you know, TD Garden with that intimidating crowd, the way Boston likes to shake things up a bit. I do like having Ryan Reeves there. So yeah, we got a ton of depth on forward. We really have a lot of depth on D too. We're just missing those high-end talents after Riley and McCabe, but yeah, there's some really tough choices out there for Sheldon Keefe. I don't think he can really go wrong other than, again, putting Matthews and Marner together and putting all his eggs in one basket, allowing Lindholm and McAvoy to kind of shut that down as they have been shut down in previous years. I think as long as he spreads it out, he's got a lot of good options. And I really did like, I know it's a small sample size, but seeing Marner, Tavares, and Nylander together for a few shifts, like they were roasting for a couple games. So maybe it's not something we do the whole game, but if you have McMahon with Tavares and Marner, and then you got Nylander, Holmberg, and whoever it is on their wing there, whether it's Robertson or Yarncroc or somebody else, you can give Willie those extra shifts in place of McMahon with Marner and Tavares. And again, if McAvoy and Lindholm aren't the ones defending that, if you're going against Grizzlick and Carlo, who have been a pair that have really struggled this year, and you have three elite offensive talents like that, that is an area where the Leafs at 5-on-5 can definitely take advantage.
And give Keep credit here for I know we rag on him a lot, but he's made some really smart plays where he isn't afraid to put that line out there in situations to succeed, whether that's off an icing call or to play them in a situation where you've got line one or line four right after, and Nylander's even back for that that third line shift, doing the double shift action. So I just, I really like their ability to use him in that way. And it's, and not get too attached to that line, but also to sparingly use it. I've seen him use it when he was playing with it. We had Domi healthy. I think he threw it together at the end of a few periods. Like at the end of the second, it just pops out there for the final shift. Like just stuff like that. And even when he's put like, he put Marner, Nylander and Matthews together at the end of a couple periods, I don't see that being a total one, because if Marner's not playing with Matthews, it's tough to get all three of them on the ice together. But yeah, just his ability to get those quick matchups and quick hits, if Boston's maybe a little asleep at the wheel there, like you said, with that top pair not being on the ice, that could be really big for the Leafs to swing a series open.
Yeah, and we've seen like the second pair for Boston right now is Grizzlick and Carlo, and they have been pretty atrocious together this year, honestly. In 170 minutes, they're sitting at about 38% expected goals. Now, I know which that's not everything, but that is something where if you have a loaded up second line, you can really take advantage of that. Now, you mentioned sitting out Connor Dewar. I think I would leave him in the lineup just because of how good he's been on the penalty kill. I think that is an area that Boston is certainly going to look to exploit. We know they did that heavily, heavily, heavily in the 2018 and 19 series. It seemed like every time they got a power play, we were getting we're picking it out of the back of our net. So I think for me, Dewar might have be a guy that has to stay in there. But yeah, what do you think of the special teams matchup? I genuinely think 5-on-5, we should be able to outplay them, but special teams, it scares me a little bit.
And I don't hate Dewar in the lineup. I keep getting in my head confused about Kroegfitz. And I feel like if we know he's not going to play game one, I do think that it lines up a bit easier. And I think our bottom sixes are identical with Dewar in there. But in my head, it's like, oh, well, Yarncroke goes in. And I don't know. He was the first guy to pop out. But yeah, I wouldn't be shocked to see him succeed in a playoff role. I really liked his game since getting him. But just on the special teams, like you've said it with Boston before, like I know at the end of the series you might look at a percentage and it's pretty similar to the Leafs, but I feel like where they succeed is when they need a power play goal, they get that power play goal, or it's like, hey, we need a big kill here, and they get that big kill. And you know, maybe you're allowing a few power play goals where you're up 5-2 in the game and you know the refs are kind of evening it out, and you're giving up a goal with 3 minutes left up 5-2. It's like, oh, okay, our percentages are the same. But I look at Boston and they don't score a lot of goals like that. It's, hey, we're down a goal, or hey, we need an insurance marker in a pivotal part of the game, and they get that power play goal every time since we've been watching them. And so I think if the Leafs can kind of throw that back at them, you know, they can have that big kill in a tie game or up one to keep it the way it is. I think that'll be a really big thing in the series. You don't necessarily have to have the best power play or the best penalty kill, but if you have that strong 5-on-5, and we get those timely goals or timely kills, I think that's going to be really big for the boys here.
Yeah, I definitely don't think we need to dominate special teams by any means to win the series. I think if we can come out even, I feel pretty good that the Leafs are going to be beating Boston at 5-on-5. But you're so right about the timeliness of that. I felt like in those 2018 and 19 series, it was just the Leafs would tie the game and Boston would get a power play late and score. It was always Pasternak lighting us up. He scares me by far the most out of anything in this series. He was Boston's leading scorer by, I think, over 30 points. So he's obviously their biggest threat. But him on the power play, he's just seemed to have our number. So, yeah, hopefully Dewar can continue to do what he's done on the power or on the penalty kill lately. But if you just look at the numbers, like we have the 7th-ranked power play. Boston's got 13th. And I'm still praying that we come out even on even strength special teams, because they are just – again, maybe that's the demons of the past that are kind of getting in my head a little bit, because Boston has not been the same team the last few playoffs, getting eliminated early in the playoffs. I think it was the first round the last couple of years. But it just, against all I have ingrained in my head is just anytime there was a penalty on the Leafs, feeling like it was an automatic goal. So I think that's going to be a huge thing. I think, again, 5-on-5 forwards, I think the Leafs have some advantages, but goaltending is another kind of area where you feel like Boston has the upper hand. I don't think you feel like it. I think anybody in the world who has access to any kind of stat sheet would tell you that Boston has the upper hand. How do you feel about the goaltending setup
here? I don't think Boston has the upper hand in goaltending. Hot take alert. But if you look at their careers, and I said
that is hot.
I said this on Twitter a few days ago, and this could be like clipped, and someone can send this to me if they lose in game 7 OT. But if you look at their careers, Jeremy Swayman and Linus Allmark have never won a entire professional careers. That's SHL, AHL, NHL for Linus Allmark. That's in the NCAA, the AHL, and the NHL for Swayman. They have never won a playoff series together. They are the two goaltenders, a part of the biggest choke in NHL history, up 3-1. They both played a game that they could have won the series in. I look at those two guys and I say, hey, if you're up a game, maybe it's you're up in a game six and you need to close it out, and you're one of those goalies and it's in the back of your head, I've never done this before. I've never been in this deep water. And I look at Ilya Samsonov, and I know Ilya Samsonov's not better, but he looked at Andrei Vasilevsky, the greatest goaltender of our generation, most winningest, he's everything. And he looked at him and he said, I got you tonight in game six, and he won 2-1 in a massive overtime game. And he said, I'm going to win this game. And he has that game breaker ability in him. And not every time. And of course, you got to get up a little bit in the series to get there. Doesn't matter in a game one or two as much. But Linus Allmark and Jeremy Swayman have never won that game before. And I can only believe what I've already seen. And I can't imagine them winning the way that I can remember our boy winning.
Hey, if we're going to live in the past of the Leafs never beating Boston and the Leafs being playoff chokers and stuff, that has to go both ways. So if Allmark and Swayman haven't won it, yeah. Again, that is a big hurdle for them to overcome. I know the numbers. Like, if you look at the stats, like, they're both among the top 10 goalies by pretty much any stat you could think of. Like, their save percentages are good, their goals saved above expected, all that type of stuff. But, yeah, they haven't proven it in the playoffs. It's... Again, like, Andrei Vasilevsky, for example, has, I don't know what his save percentage ended up being this year. I think it was somewhere in the low 900s, well below both of the Boston goalies and Swayman and Allmark. But if you're asking me who would I rather face, I'm taking Swayman and Allmark every time because they, like you said, they haven't proven it. I feel like goaltending as it is already kind of enough of a wild card that, you know, it's like, again, if it's Hellebuck or Vasilevsky or... you know, Ottinger, maybe even Shesterkin, like those guys, yeah, you feel like you're up against it. But with all the other goalies, and I don't think these guys have proven themselves to stand out above the pack that much, you can't really rely on that if you're Boston. Like, you can hope for it, but you can maybe expect it. But in a seven-game series, like you said, Samsonov has shown he can get hot. He can win the big game. Again, he's had some bad games as well. But yeah, I'm kind of with you in that regard. I would certainly prefer to be in Boston's position if I were – you know, just picking my goalies because they kind of have two kicks at the can while the Leafs only have one. But yeah, as far as advantages go, I'd rather have the advantage in terms of forwards than in goalies in this series.
Well, and I think a big thing with the goalies is we talked earlier about Montgomery and him being scared to switch to goalies and him not doing it at the right time. And I'm very curious to see how he plays it this time because, you know, he had the entire summer to think that decision over. He's had all year to think that decision over. I think they split the games 44-40 this season. Like, I'm looking at these guys, and I just think that there's an opportunity to maybe make the wrong call about pulling a guy too early. And, you know, it's Swayman. He gets pumped a little bit, and then you're pulling him right away. I'm going to Allmark. And now Swayman's confidence is in the drain because you've pulled him early and then you're going to Allmark and it doesn't work. You're going back and forth. There's no continuity. I look at something like that as a possibility. So, like, obviously, and you know, I'm almost like copium trying to make up reasons for why it's not a big deal that they have these two studded goalies. But there's a double-edged sword where they're so great, but – Can you rely on one of them to lead you through seven games? Is the switching going to be a difference maker? Is that a big deal for Monk maybe assessing himself? I think there's a lot to this goaltending thing. And I'm really, really interested to see how this looks game three, game four, and what a big deal this goaltending is for them.
Yeah, I'd love to know what Montgomery's plan is right now. Like, is he planning? I'm assuming he's going to start Swayman because Swayman started so well against the Leafs this year. But again, is he going into that game one saying if Swayman plays well, he gets game two? Or is he saying I'm going back and forth tandem mode? Like, yeah, it's a lot of questions. again, I would rather have two good options than one in any scenario, but you do make a good point of the mental aspect of it. And that is, we've seen that with goalies, especially Samsonov this year, right? Confidence wise, when he came in, he lost his confidence. He couldn't stop a beach ball. Like he put forth, honestly, there was about a 3 week stretch there where he did worse than any 3 week stretch I would bet Toskala ever had. Like it was the worst goaltending I've ever seen. He gets a break. He clears his mind. He has confidence and he puts up, I believe, a 913 save percentage in his last, you know, since the new year, if you take out those last two games, which again, that's kind of cherry picking stats, but confidence is sky high, which again, that kind of scares me a little bit that Samsonov had a bad couple games to end his season. Is that in his head? But he's going in a lot more certain in the fact that he's the starting goalie for the Leafs than either of the Bruins goalies are, I would say.
100%. And he said that nice week off too. I think what was his last game? He would have played on the Saturday in versus Detroit, and he gets a few games off, you know, go home. He's hanging with his kid and just refresh the mind and then back out on the road. So I think that whole week off might be really good for him. And yeah, that whole team was pretty garbage the last couple games. I'm not looking at Samsonov too much. Like, if you go back, how many of them are like really on him? It's the old Freddie Anderson. Oh, he can't stop that one. But yeah, like that's a brutal game. They're all looking for 70 that night, and he's kind of on the back end of it, having to deal with a lot of cheating for offense. So I'm excited for him. You know, like we've said, he's done it before. He's been the goalie to make that big save and win the game. So I'm curious to see if he can do it a couple more times, because, man, this Leafs team will really need him too if we're going to do anything this year.
Yeah. Honestly, to beat Boston, if Swayman and or Allmark don't play out of their minds, it's not like we need an unbelievable performance from Samsonov, right? You just need him to basically be what he was in the last half of the year. Slightly above average should be good, but yeah, make some big saves on that penalty kill, and we should, we should be feeling good about the team. So that is a big couple things I'd say where Boston has the upper hand, maybe in goaltending and special teams. But again, I just look at those forward groups, like seeing. I was surprised to see what Marchand did this year. I was just assuming he was kind of a point of game guy. Still seeing he's only a 65 point guy, and there's such a gap between Pasternak and himself, like. I really think people are kind of overrating the aspect of the Bruins just from the past so much. Like, it is, to me, head and shoulders the difference between Florida and Boston. Again, if you look at the stats in the second half of the year since the All-Star break, like Boston since the All-Star break is 16th in points percentage, 14th in goals for percentage, 17th in expected goals, whereas the Leafs are 6th, 3rd, and 6th in those categories. So if you look at the latter half of the year, the Leafs have been a significantly better team. I just do wonder how that TD Garden impact is going to affect the Leafs a little bit.
Well, and it's good you brought up Marchand, because if it's the Marchand-Coyle line going up against Matthews, which we're both in agreement seems to be the plan, I think that's going to be interesting about the wingers. Can Marchand and DeBrusk get in the heads of Domi and Bertuzzi, or is that a non-factor? Can the Leafs kind of shut that out of mind? Domi going to get caught taking some dumb penalties, you know, because that can be a really big deal in like a game one where Domi kind of gets a little frustrated. Maybe he's a little slower, takes a few sticking calls and maybe a third man in type penalty. And, you know, that's two opportunities you're giving David Pastrnak in that power play. And is that the way Marchand's going to beat you if he's not able to do it on his on-ice play anymore as well as he used to? So I think if Domi and Bertuzzi, especially, not that they need to keep their emotions in check, I'd like to see them maybe keep up what they've been doing all season, but just making sure that guy doesn't get in your head and that you're poking him a little bit, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of a fine line, right? Because a big reason why I like this team so much more and I feel like they're so much more suited to the playoffs is because of guys like Bertuzzi, Domi, McCabe, Edmondson, Benoit, Labushkin to an extent, like Reeves, all these guys who bring that toughness. But we've seen a few times, right? The Leafs kind of have a different standard. Like you look at that game against Florida where the third man in, when the Leafs do it, gets a penalty. When Florida does it, it's not a penalty. Like, it's going to depend on how the game is officiated. And I think for the Leafs, the fewer penalties there are, the better it's going to be for us. Because again, that special teams advantage Boston most likely is going to have. So I think early in the series, that's going to be especially big because we see it every first round where, you know, games 1, 2, and 3, the refs kind of want to show that, oh, we don't ref things differently in the playoffs, and they call pretty much everything. And then once the series get into the, you know, the meat and potatoes, games 4 through 7, it starts to tighten up. So I think if the Leafs can come out of those first, you know, 3 or 4 games up a game or tied or whatever, I think it's going to bode well for them going into the end if there's going to be less penalties called and taken and they can kind of start to rough it up a little more. I'm just looking forward to Joel Edmondson pulling off some of those nasty cross checks that he was pulling off against the Leafs in that Montreal series a few years ago.
Yeah, I'd like to see a clip of Marchand, Mr. 5'9", still 6'5", Joel Edmondson in the scrum trying to get at him. You know, just looking up at him like, oh, you know what, maybe I'll wait till the next shift, see if I can get Benoit or someone. I don't want to deal with this guy's cross check.
No, Marchand's not going to do that. He's going to go for Timothy Liljegren. He does not deal with tougher guys. We saw that in that that mic'd up clip from the last time they played the Leafs where he's chirping Marner, saying he's going to kill him, he's going to fight him, all that stuff. And then as soon as Max Domi goes after him, he turtles and shells himself on the ground. So that's all I expect from Marchand. I know that my blood is going to boil at 200 degrees watching him play, and probably with something stupid that Jake DeBrusk's going to do, because he, you know, he randomly turns into, like, I don't know, Luke Robitaille against the Leafs or something like that. Like, he's just another animal out there against us. So he is kind of an X factor for me that scares me a little bit. And again, another area that is kind of up in the air for Leafs is on defense. So I got to ask you, like, what do you think Sheldon Keefe's leaning towards doing on defense here?
I feel like we're all pretty in agreement about 5 of the 6 guys. I think the one guy that a lot of people come back to is Brody and what the plan's going to be for him. He's a guy who, like, I think it's Brody, Bush, and Liljegren. Those are kind of the three guys everyone's a little bit weary on who's gonna take those last two spots. I personally think that Brody's gonna sit game one. I think that they're just gonna go tough lineup, some heavy guys out there. I think they really like Liljegren's ability to break the puck out of the zone, especially against some of those bottom six lines that you can try to win that matchup early in games 1 and 2. And then, you know, if the penalty kill is a problem, we know TJ Brody was playing like 20 minutes in a lot of those games kind of towards the end of the season, starting on the third pair, but, you know, getting a lot of those big penalty kill minutes. But with Edmondson back, being able to take on a little bit more of that, with maybe McCabe here now that he's taken a few games off, I think maybe you try sitting Brody at the start, hoping Liljegren can maybe take on a power play 2 role, break the puck out a little bit more, and maybe win that matchup. So I think right now for me, I'm going the Riley Bush, McCabe Benoit, and then Edmondson Liljegren, because I did like them before Liljegren got hurt. And then, you know, that's an easy change, taking Liljegren out or taking Bush out for Brody and for his PK ability in a game 2 or a game 3 right away.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. We do need the puck moving of Liljegren. And also, I don't want to sit him in game 1 for the 3rd straight year. I don't think the difference between him and Brody or him and Lyubushkin is so vast that you want to sit him and shatter his confidence again. We've seen how he kind of plays better when he's got some confidence. So maybe if they give him game 1, put him beside Edmondson, an experienced veteran guy who, like you said, they had some good chemistry in those first couple games together. So if they can kind of keep that going into game 1, I feel like that would be a good pairing for us. Benoit and McCabe kind of give them some of the tougher matchups because they're solid defensively. And then again, try to let Riley feast a little bit offensively. I'd say the one, like, personally for me, who I'd be more likely to sit in favor of Brody would be Lyubushkin, like you kind of said there. Again, the Riley-Brody pairing, I feel like that could get me kicked out of town for even bringing that pairing up as a possibility. I don't know what the kind of configurations would be, but I do think all 7 of those guys, if you include Riley, McCabe, Brody, Benoit, Liljegren, Lyubushkin, they all have a role to play in the playoffs. Edmondson as well. So it's gonna be some kind of rotation. You know, Tree Living has built some depth there where we have probably a number 2 caliber guy in Riley, a number 3 caliber guy in McCabe, and then a bunch of number 5s and 6s. We have about like 6 or 7 of those. So again, it's kind of going to have to come together patchwork. I think if the Leafs are to win the Cup this year, it's going to have to be very similar to that 1 year the Penguins won it with Ron Hainsey playing some top minutes before he came to the Leafs. So it's not always going to be pretty. But again, if other teams sustain injuries and the Leafs sustain injuries, I think the Leafs are the ones that are going to be better off there, because the, you know, as long as it's not Riley or McCabe who gets hurt, I think we have the kind of depth to sustain any kind of injuries.
Exactly. They've got a good 1 through 9 of just, they're all NHL guys. And I know that's kind of been a weird term this year. Always an NHL player. And that's a good excuse to say about someone who's a bad NHLer. But yeah, they've got 1 through 9. They've got a bunch of guys. They can come at you with different styles. You know, I look at a guy like Connor Timmins. I don't see him making an impact in the playoffs, but you know, you go down a few injuries, you need a couple stops on power play too. There's a guy who can go in, especially if the forward depth's not looking great with injuries. You definitely have a guy like Mark Giordano who's been there. He's a warrior. A guy like him coming in as your 7 or 8, probably your 8th defenseman, is unbelievable depth, especially if he's coming in healthy after not playing for a week. He's been practicing every day. The team loves him. He gets fired up into a game. Like that's some tidy business there, instead of calling up some first pair AHL guy who's got 5 NHL games on the year. I think that's a big advantage, especially in those deep, deep runs.
Yeah. I think, again, I don't think the Leafs have anywhere near one of the best defense groups in the playoffs, but at least, again, yeah, they do have, I'd say, at least 8 NHL caliber defensemen. And then Connor Timmins is kind of, you know, hit or miss for me. He has his moments, but I'm not going to lie, I'd be pretty horrified to see what he would do in a playoff game. But yeah, man, it's going to be interesting to watch. There's a lot of good matchups. I think we should take a break here and then get into our some of our predictions for the series. All right, we are back on the Buds All Day podcast, about to give some predictions for this series before we wrap it up. So for the big prediction, Noah, just got to ask, who do you think wins the series? How many games, and why do you feel that way?
Personally, I think this is going 6 games. I think Toronto's taking the first 2 in Boston. I think that Matthews matchup is going to be really tough for the Bruins to take on. I think that they're going to get caught up in it. They're going to be abusing those 2 defensemen out there and get caught up in that whole matchup. And then that second line's just going to feast on that Bruins team, and they'll be slow to adjust. And then by the time they do, Matthews will be sitting there. Maybe he's only got like a point through 2 games because they've done a great job of kind of holding him down. And as soon as he gets to Toronto, he just pops off because they've spread out the defense, and there's not enough on him, and he gets through on 1 or 2 chances a game, and that's a difference. And so I think there'll be a big game comeback from Boston. Maybe in Toronto, it'll be a comeback to 2-1. Toronto goes up 3-1. You know, Boston's always good for a big game to get it like around to push it to game 6. But I think it's going to be in 6. Toronto taking it on home ice, and it'll just be, they get caught up in the Matthews matchup. Once that goes and they spread out, Matthews just takes over. Series is over. You've dug yourself too deep of a hole.
I love it. I love it so much that it was actually very similar to what my prediction was, but I want to have a little bit of variety on here. So I'm going to take my prediction a step further. And I genuinely could see this happening. I could see the Leafs winning in 5. I think very much like you said, I think if Boston does decide to go with McAvoy and Lindholm as their first pairing, I think they're going to regret that decision. And I think they're going to abandon that after a game or two, because they're going to be down early in the series. Unless Swayman or Allmark comes up with a big game, which is definitely possible. But I think the Leafs are going to come out. They're going to kind of control game 1, like you said, with that second and third line, kind of eating up Boston a little bit. And I think even though they're shutting down Matthews, they're putting those assets towards stopping him, I think in the first couple of games, he's still going to have some kind of impact out there. He's still going to, he'll be shutting guys down. But I think he's just so good at this point. He's better than any version of Matthews that we've seen in the playoffs so far. Like last year, we went around with him, you know, as an 88-point guy with, I think he had like 40 goals last year. He's a different version of himself this year. He's fully healthy. He's confident as ever. And I think even with this line matching, he's going to have an impact. But Boston's going to have to switch out of that going into the later part of the series, because it's just going to be so bad for the middle of their lineup. And yeah, I think the Leafs are going to win in 5. They're going to win one in the TD Garden to do it. The last thing I ever want to see in a million years is a game 7. I could not take game 7 4.0 against Boston. So I'm going Leafs in 5. I think they do it in Boston. And I think they slay the dragon. And then everybody, as soon as the Leafs win the series, that's when they're going to go from talking about how Boston owns the Leafs to, oh, this isn't the real version of Boston anymore. This is no Bergeron, no Char, no Krejci. Leafs didn't really do anything. Time for them to get smacked up by Florida. That's what I think the storylines will be coming out of this series. Now, going into my next question for you, we may have led into that with the way we both talked about this guy last time, but who do you think is the MVP of this series?
I think it's easy to say Austin. So in a way to be different, I'm going to go with Marner because I think that Marner's going to get lost a little in this series. I think that he has a real opportunity to take a look at that lesser matchup. I think a lot of the headline space is going to be grabbed by Matthews, a lot of the defensive coverage. Marner's not been playing a lot recently, so there's not a lot to talk about him. And I think that he's got a lot to prove. You know, the contract comes up. It's no secret if they don't do anything this year that he's an easy target to leave. Doesn't have a long-term contract or that ability to stay like Tavares does after this year. I just feel like he has a lot to prove, and he could quietly just come out, have a really strong first two games, taking on some of those lesser matchups. If I was him, I'd honestly be disappointed. That's not the word, but like upset that, hey, Matt Grizzlick and Brandon Carlo, that's who you're going to throw at me. Like, I'm one of the best forwards in the league. What are you doing? And if he takes this to heart and takes it personally, a little bit of that Michael Jordan last dance, and he goes, what the heck are you doing? I think that he has a real opportunity, just like he did in 2019, to have an incredible in some of the games. And I think he could really take it on, especially if that Matthews has taken on that big matchup. Marner could just feast on some of those lower level Boston guys.
I like it. I hope you're right. I know it would do a lot for his reputation if he could have a big series against Boston. I know a lot of people forget that he did have a huge series against Tampa last year. So I'm not going to say if he does that, it'll rewrite his whole career, but it'll be a huge step in towards, like you said, getting that contract extension, getting the fans on his side. Yeah, if he can tear it up versus Boston, like you said, Matt Grizzlick and Brandon Carlo should be no match for them. It should be easy pickings for them, especially when it's, you know, Pavel Zacha or Charlie Coyle, who is the center on the opposing line. So I would love to see that. I wouldn't be surprised with anything Marner does, honestly. I wouldn't be surprised if he has 10 points in 6 games, dominates. I wouldn't be surprised if he absolutely falters under the lights of TD Garden. But I sure hope you're right. Now, for me, again, the easy MVP selection is Austin Matthews, and that's where I'm going to go. I just think he's too good at this point. He is, if not the best player in the league, unquestionably top 2 to me. You can't argue anything lower than top 3. I know Nikita Kucherov had a great year, blah, blah, blah. Secondary assists, half of his points were on the power play. Doesn't play defense, all those types of things. It's time for Austin Matthews. He's 26 years old. He's got to show. Again, we've seen him do it in the regular season. I couldn't care less if he scored 70 goals. Like, I wanted him to score 70 so that he could sit for the latter games. It's a cool accomplishment, whatever. But I don't care if he wins the Hart Trophy. I don't care if he wins the Rocket. I just want him to win the Conn Smythe. I want him to win a Stanley Cup or at least go on a deep run. That's what he has to do to cement himself as the greatest Leaf, and it starts here. I'm going to give an honorable mention to another guy, though. I think we see something big out of Willie. I think Willie has been taking a lot of criticism lately because he hasn't been giving it his all. I think it's easy to see that he has not been giving it his all every game, but I think he's earned himself the benefit of the doubt with his performance the last 3 to 4 years in the playoffs. He has been lights out time and time again. So I'm expecting Willie to do what Willie does, come up with at least a point a game in this series. How do you feel about Willie going into this one?
Well, Willie's the second highest paid player in this series, and it was a big topic of the time saying, oh, well, I know I was big on tweeting this about Pastrnak's number in comparison to Nylander's number. And so, man, what a way it would be for Nylander in that first opportunity after signing that contract to say, well, obviously I've paid more. Look at what I've done versus what this guy did in the series. And so I think it'd be a real opportunity. It's kind of been the year of Nylander going back to Sweden a little bit. I do love that with him, and especially against some of those third pair guys. Those bottom 6 matchups, if he gets caught out there going up against like JVR in 2024. Woo! That could be something for us.
Yeah, he could be a one-man machine, right? So if he's going against the lower likes of the league, all he has to do is get the puck with some speed through the neutral zone, drive the net, and it's lights out. So Willie is a guy I'm keeping my eye on for sure. Now we're going to talk a little bit about X-Factor. So it can be Leafs, could be one for Boston, could be both if you have them in mind. Who's a guy who's maybe not one of the top names who you're expecting to have a major impact on this series?
I'd be a guy on there. I go back to him versus Tampa. You know, they lose the first game. He comes in. They win four of the next five right away. He's on the ice for every goal in overtime. I think he was on for another big goal in the game that they won that didn't go into overtime. He dominates the Florida series. The only way that they can stop him is by choke slamming him onto the ice behind the net. Like, I look at him as a player who can kind of, not that I think he had a bad regular season, but I think he came in with a lot of expectations on himself. He's played a lot of hockey recently. He's seen his minutes diminish a bit. And I think in like a lower line energy role going up against Pat Maroon and JVR on like a fourth line, playing with her on a third line, he could really show like, hey, I'm right here. Like, this is my party too. I'm a guy who can play games in the playoffs. And so if he's not taking some of those stick and fraction penalties he's been taking at the end of the year, and if he's banging and crashing and maybe putting a goal or two away at 5-on-5, I think that he could be a real big X factor, especially tilting that ice in favor on that fourth line. And I know it's fourth lines, but I remember that series we played against Tampa where we lost. Like, I remember their fourth line was a huge X factor with like Corey Perry getting a few goals here and there. And I just look at Matt and Nyes, if he can be a guy who helps that line outscore the fourth line on their team, like 2-1, 3-1, that could be huge series for them with a big goal.
Yeah, I think you're on to something with him. I think a lot of people will assume if he's on line four, he's not doing anything because Ryan Reeves is there. But we saw his nice clapper goal the other night, the one-timer. Reeves has been a lot better. He's got some speed. And if he's not performing, I think that line will probably get adjusted if it becomes a problem for the Leafs. But I could see Nyes having an impact. He is built for the playoffs kind of type of guy. I think for me, I have a Leafs one and I have a Bruins one. For me, the Leafs one is – actually, I'll go with the Bruins one first. You can probably guess who it is. It's Jake DeBrusk. I hate that guy with every ounce, the fiber of my being. He shows up against the Leafs. He got Nazem Kadri kicked out of the series in the first round the last time that we played them. I hate him, and he scares me even though – you know, Boston was willing to give him away for basically a bag of chips. Again, for me, I consider him like almost a first or second line caliber player going into this series. So he scares me. My X factor for the Leafs, a guy who I think is going to play a huge role, is Jake McCabe. He's been heart and soul all year. Him and Benoit are the closest thing the Leafs have to a shutdown pair. I think if he can go up, and I know he struggled last year in the playoffs a little bit as a shutdown guy with TJ Brody. I don't think the challenge is as strong this year from Boston, obviously, compared to the lines he was facing on Tampa and Florida. And I think, again, him and Benoit have shown some strong defensive capabilities. I think they both play a playoff style where if they can get away with some extra stuff, they're going to be pretty strong. So I like Jake McCabe as my Leafs X factor. Now I got one more for you. So, biggest flop. Either team, who do you think is going to be the one that after this series we say, that guy really, Mitch Marner'd, could have been for the Leafs or for the Bruins?
Oh, you know what? I'm gonna stick with my hot take on the Bruins goaltending. I think we're going to start looking at them the way we look at a guy. Oh, I know Vezina nominations, you're up there, save for, you know, great regular seasons, play like your 60 games, do amazing. But when the game's on the line, you're not a guy that we're looking towards. And so for me, I think that it's going to be – I want to say the Boston goaltenders. I don't want to pick one out because you never know who it's going to be or what their situation's going to be. But I think that they're coming in as a lot of people who were picking Boston are just pointing at those two guys saying that's the reason Boston's going to win. And I think, man, when you get into that deep water of a game 5-6-7, I've just looked at them and they've not been able to win. They were part of losing two overtime games last year in Game 5 and Game 7, both of them losing a different one. I think that's a huge reason for this series, that they've just not been the way that Samsonov has. And I think that's something.
Yeah, I sure hope you're right. Again, I think if the Leafs lose the series, I think the biggest flop that we're probably going to be talking about after would be the Leafs goaltending. So if the Leafs lose, I think whatever team loses, probably their goaltending is going to be a big reason why. Yeah, it's hard to kind of go through this series and think who I really think is going to disappoint. I don't know why, but I just feel like everybody's had enough of Marchand's antics. I feel like he doesn't strike fear into people. I think like Marner in that video is kind of laughing at him. I think Marchand might get frustrated, especially if the Bruins get down, might take some stupid penalties, do some dumb stuff. So again, these are our biggest flops, considering that we're guys that are predicting Leafs in 5 and/or 6. We can't really have Leaf guys as the flop. So I think Brad Marchand is going to be the biggest flop. I'm saying if it's 5 games, he's going to have like 2 points and he'll have like something like 4 to 5 minor penalties or something like that.
I love that. I love that thinking, just that he tries to rally the boys, you know, to double an idiot in front of the net, just trying to, oh, I'm going to get in their heads and rent free, and just flubs it for them. Easy power play, take the win. Oh, man, would I love to see that after all these years.
It would, again, it's a high risk, high reward kind of series, because if we lose, it's going to suck. It's not going to suck as bad as losing to Montreal did, but man, if we win, just slaying that dragon. I know, again, it's a beaten down version of the dragon compared to what it was in the past, but I think we've, at least I've always kind of thought, like, for the Leafs to win the Cup, that run had to go through Boston at some point. They have to beat Boston on their way to the Cup, and if they're going to do it, why not make it this year? So I feel pretty good that this is the year that Boston goes down to the Leafs, and we can kind of flip that page and then hopefully get a little bit of revenge on Florida, or keep putting the nails in Tampa's coffin in round two.
Exactly. Wouldn't I love to see Florida one more time? Us talking about them in 2 weeks. Wouldn't that be something nice?
It'd be something. I'll be honest. I would almost, again, this is overly optimistic. I'm not saying this series is very close to a coin flip, but I don't even know who I'd rather face between Tampa and Florida, because I feel like if Tampa beats Florida, it's going to be on the back of some crazy Vasilevsky goaltending. And if it's Tampa with a hot Vasilevsky or Florida, those are both some pretty unenticing options. So I don't love our round two opponent either way. I think out of those three teams, Florida, Boston, Tampa, I think Boston is the one you probably would want to face the most with the way they're playing right now.
Yeah, and I think my favorite thing about the Tampa-Florida series is that it's on a different night. So I can watch both series, both Atlantic teams, because, wow, that's going to be exciting going back and forth every single night. But yeah, I hope that's a great series, and that battle of Florida could get real ugly pretty soon for one of those teams. Especially, I think Florida's lost both times they've played Tampa, and Tampa's gone on to Cup. So that's got to be something in the back of this too. They're probably thinking the same thing we are with Boston. So maybe we are going to see Tampa in 2 weeks, and we do the trilogy fight. Holy storylines galore.
Either way, like a round two series with the Leafs in it, even like if the Bruins win too, if they like, especially if they face Florida, like a rematch of the previous year where the Bruins blew it too. Like Gary Bettman had to have been like just dancing on Tuesday night when he found out that he was going to get Battle of Florida and then a nice original 6 Leafs matchup. You look at some of the other ones too, like, you know, Colorado, Winnipeg is going to be amazing. It's the games are going on right now, but I'm really hoping for Vegas versus Edmonton in round one. Like, this is the most intrigued I've been by a playoffs in a long time.
I know. I can't wait to see and soak it all in. And especially this weekend is going to be sick watching the first two games and not have to miss one because of timing. So I'm really excited about this. It's going to be a great playoffs. And like I said, I hope to see you guys in 2 weeks when we're talking about another series, eh?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. It's been a pleasure to get back behind the mic with you. I have no idea of when we might get on again. Could be mid-series, could be end of the series, could be in a year if it doesn't go well. Who knows? But Either way, Noah, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Hey, take care, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. And for everybody else, thanks for listening. We will hopefully see you sometime in the midst of a Leafs victory over the Bruins. So thanks for listening. See you next time.